By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Moody's Talks Focus on Finance, where we will be discussing the outlook for banks in Africa as the continent starts to slowly recover after the economic and social stress caused by the prolonged pandemic. I'm your host, Carolyn Henson, and I'm joined by Africa Banking Team analysts Konstantinos Kyprios and Mick Habeya. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Carolyn. Nice to be here with you today.
Hi, Caroline. Thanks for having us.
So your team has just published outlooks on the five largest banking systems in Africa. So that's South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Morocco, and Kenya. Obviously, these are five very different systems. Konstantinos, are there any overall trends that you're seeing across all of them?
With regards to the African banking systems, you are right in saying that these are very different to each other, but indeed there are some common dynamics. The first and more positive trend is that we expect improvements in banks' financial metrics. For example, we expect higher profits, mainly because of lower provisioning needs, and to a lesser extent, rising margins as interest rates go up. We are already seeing higher capital buffers following lower dividend payouts over the past couple of years, while most banks remain deposit-funded and liquid. On loan quality, pressures do remain, but they are less acute than a year or two ago as authorities' support measures were generally effective. Having said this, however, the operating and the macro conditions remain difficult, and this is especially so for sub-Saharan Africa. More specifically, the economic recovery is fragile, with growth insufficient to recoup the output that was lost to the pandemic. And similarly, government finances remain stretched with high fiscal deficits and in many cases rising debt. And with banks holding an ever-increasing portion of government securities, their credit profile is linked to that of the government. And this is actually one of the reasons why we rarely rate banks higher than the government.
Okay, that's interesting. Are there any other sort of more medium-term trends that you're also seeing?
There are two additional initiatives that are now more prominent in banks' operations. The first is the use of new technology, electronic payment platforms, mobile technology, data analytics, artificial intelligence. All of these help deepen financial inclusion. And at least in Africa's case, this is creating more opportunities than disruptions to the banks. There's also increased focus on ESG and especially environmental considerations. Although Africa is not a significant source of greenhouse gas emissions, it is the continent that is most exposed to environmental risk. As a result, there is a lot of focus by banks on addressing such risk, but also on how to take advantage of opportunities within green financing.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. We see the US Federal Reserve is signaling monetary tightening ahead with three interest rate rises planned for this year. Will this affect African banks? Mick, can I bring you in here?
Sure. Thank you, Caroline. The prospect of monetary policy tightening in the US this year does increase credit risk for highly dollarized banks in emerging and frontier markets, which include African countries. This is because an increase in the federal fund rates and the runoff of the Federal Reserve balance sheets are likely to slow the flow of capital into emerging economies, which will weigh on economic growth and on the local currencies. The African banking system that have large volumes of foreign currency loans and deposits on their balance sheets, such as Nigerian banks, for example, are particularly vulnerable. This reflects the fact that a slowdown in capital flows and a weakening in local currency would together tighten the foreign currency liquidity in the local banking systems and constrain the repayment capacity of the unhedged borrowers.
Okay, when you say unhedged, do you mean that they haven't got revenues in dollars, so they are more vulnerable to changes in exchange rate?
Correct. So these are borrowers that earn revenues in local currency, but did borrow funds from the banking system in foreign currency, primarily dollars, and hence, as you said, are vulnerable to a change in the exchange rates.
Now, two of the outlooks you've published have a negative outlook. I think it's South Africa, isn't it, and Morocco. What particular difficulties are you seeing in those countries? Let's take South Africa first.
Thank you, Caroline. The pressure on South African banks primarily come from the macroeconomic side. So the low economic growth, the rising government debt, which has doubled in the last decade to over 80% of GDP, and the limited progress on economic reforms. Now, all of these factors combine impact the credit profile of banks via muted business growth, pressure on the loan quality, but more importantly, because banks are directly exposed to the government via their holdings of government securities. And in the case of South African banks, this has increased to around 17% of their total assets. More positively, however, we also acknowledge that banks' financial metrics are improving. Capital levels have strengthened, banks remain liquid, profitability is recovering on the back of lower provisions. We expect loan loss provisions to remain above historical levels, but lower than those reported in 2020 and 2021. Also, the additional precautionary provisions that banks have taken over the last 2 years have not been released. So banks still carry this on their books, and this will allow them to more easily absorb any renewed pressures on the loan portfolio. And if I may, I also wanted to mention that authorities are moving towards a new bank resolution regime with bail-in powers. That's where creditors share some of the losses in resolution. The time frame for implementation remains unclear and will include a phase-in period, but once implemented in the coming years, we will be applying our advanced loss given failure analysis to rated banks.
Okay, I see. Thanks for that. Now, Morocco also carries a negative outlook. Why is that? Mick, can you answer that one for us?
Sure, Caroline. Our negative outlook on the Moroccan banking system reflects the risk that the government could have a lower capacity to support the local banks in case of needs. And this is indicated by the negative outlook on the sovereign rating in Morocco. In addition, we expect that the loan performance of Moroccan banks would weaken slightly due to the gradual withdrawal of pandemic support measures. More positively, though, the country's economic growth will stabilize after the pandemic disruption in 2020, with public investment and household spending boosting economic activity this year. Finally, banks' profitability will remain broadly stable, funding will remain strong, and liquidity will stay high.
So it's not all negative for Morocco. That's good. Now, we've not spoken about Egypt yet, and that's also quite an interesting one. The country's implemented all sorts of reforms in recent years, right? Both economic and within the banking sector. Are these having an impact on the banks?
Well, it is true that Egyptian banks entered the pandemic in relatively good shape, and this has followed a multi-year restructuring of the banking sector that has included the restructuring and recapitalization of state-owned banks, a cleanup of legacy non-performing loans, as well as implementation of more effective supervision and new regulation. And in addition to the banking reforms, authorities also implemented structural reforms, such as the flotation of the currency of the Egyptian pound. And at the same time, they remain committed to business environment reforms and improvements in the competitiveness. As a result of these initiatives, we expect stronger economic growth of around 5.5% in 2022 and credit growth of over 20%. That will also boost profitability, while any loan quality pressures that arise as COVID-related forbearance measures are withdrawn will be manageable. At the same time, the high remittances from the Egyptian diaspora and deepening financial inclusion will also support deposit mobilization and allow banks to remain liquid and able to finance both the private sector and the government.
Okay. So, are there any big challenges ahead for the Egyptian banks?
Pockets of risks, of course, remain. For example, capital buffers of state-owned banks are modest. But then again, these banks have the full backing of the government as the shareholder. Similarly, and as Mick mentioned earlier, foreign currency liquidity is vulnerable to investor sentiment and to higher dollar interest rates.
Now, what about Nigerian banks? Oil is a main export, so do oil prices play a role in the fortunes of the country's banks?
Thank you, Caroline. Yes, given that Nigeria is an oil exporting country, higher oil prices do increase the dollar receipts that the country uses to support the activity in some important sectors of the economy, such as the trade sector and the manufacturing sector.
So higher oil prices have improved the outlook for the Nigerian banking sector then?
Yes, we have changed our outlook for the Nigerian banking sector from negative to stable in order to reflect our expectation of stronger economic activity in Nigeria this year amid higher oil prices. The stronger economic growth will boost banks' business volumes and earnings, while also protecting their loan performance from further weakness. Nonetheless, loan performance remains vulnerable to a fall in oil prices and to high lending concentration to single sectors and to single borrowers. In addition, a potential end to forbearance may also weaken the bank's asset quality, since a large volume of the loans did benefit from either rescheduling or restructuring before and during the pandemic. This being said, Nigerian banks hold solid capital buffers, and the ongoing implementation of Basel III global capital standards will likely improve capital quality.
Thank you. So last but not least, we have Kenya. What are the main trends you're seeing for Kenyan banks, Mick?
Our outlook for Kenya's banking sector is stable. We expect solid real GDP growth this year, supported by development spending as well as a buoyant service sector. In addition, any permanent economic scarring from the pandemic will be limited. High problem loans are the main credit challenge facing Kenyan banks, but these will drop closer to pre-pandemic levels over the next 12 to 18 months.
And how high are problem loans?
Problem loans in Kenya are a high 13.1% as of December 2021 of total banks lending, which is slightly lower than the peak of 14.6% in March 2021.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot, Mick, for that. Well, we have to leave it there. So thanks very much to both of you for your insights. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Please join us again for the next edition of Moody's Talks, Focus on Finance, which will be on Wednesday, February the 23rd.